Hello, listener. This is Sean Harris, and I'm with Paco Garcia, and this is GMS Magazine Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about Black role-playing content creators, Black designers, like the kind of games we want to play, and it's going to be a little bit different in that I'm not just going to tell you I'm not going to go around telling you who to follow or whose games to check out. I mean, we all have different tastes. But instead, we're going to share our taste, and we're going to ask you, dear listener, to help us out and tell us, you know, the Black designers who are doing stuff along the lines of what we're looking at. And so, because we definitely want to know about them, and we definitely want to give them a huge shout out. So, I guess where that starts is, Paco, what kind of games do you like to play?
Well, I describe myself to my gaming group as a raging, you know, what's the, I don't know what the sex addict kind of equivalent to RPGs would be, because I would be up for absolutely anything RPG-wise. I tend to play an awful lot of fantasy and horror. Those are the games that I have the most accessible. And I have played a little tiny bit of science fiction. But if I have to say what I've played the most, that's going to be medieval fantasy and horror, which it's been like that for, you know, I don't know, all my life.
So, like, but I mean, I know we talked about horror in the previous podcast. So it's like, so there's a specific type of horror that you gravitate to, right?
Yes, I like Lovecraftian horror. I like that kind of psychological, gritty, dark, not particularly gruesome, but mind-bending sort of horror.
Oh, yeah. That immediately brings to mind, and I know I said I wasn't going to throw stuff out there, but I was like, have you checked out Harlem Unbound?
I have not, for one reason alone, and is that when the Kickstarter came out, over the last couple of years, I have been pretty penniless. So I haven't backed an awful lot of Kickstarters. So when Chris Pivey got it out, I couldn't back it. And getting that sort of games in Spain is pretty hard. And I have to be honest, because I receive a fair amount of games for review purposes, and I need to prioritize those, I haven't got it. But it is definitely one I would love to take a look at.
That sounds really interesting. I mean, especially considering the source of material, Lovecraft himself is a huge racist.
Oh my god, what do you say? Oh my god, how dare you say that? Do you know that people are going to say, oh, but it doesn't matter because it was so long ago and everybody was racist at the time, and therefore why do you bother about that? And it shouldn't bother you. Because that's how I hear when I read that sort of thing, that's how they sound in my head.
Listen, look, if you name your cat what he named his cat, you're racist. Okay?
Yeah.
It's like, who does that? Racist.
Exactly. So
it's one of those blatant examples that people always point to. Is like, if you do that, you're racist. He did it. He's racist.
Yeah, and he didn't hide it. I mean, other racists from the time, like Howard, shunned Lovecraft for his racism. You know, he was way, way up there in the racist scale, even for his time. Mm-hmm. And you know what, people? It's okay to admit it, and it's okay to still like the shit that he spewed. Right. Because, let's face it, he wasn't that good of a writer either.
Ooh.
Sorry, but it's just the truth. He wasn't that good. He was very imaginative. He was very original. He was very weird, but he wasn't that good a writer, and he was a fucking piece of shit, crazy shit. Sorry. This is the case. That's it. That's the case. That's it. Done.
Yeah. What I find interesting about Lovecraftian horror in particular is that quite a few Black people and other people of color have taken that playground and ran with it, and I love it. Like, not just in role-playing games either, but like for instance, like, you know, the HBO's Lovecraft Country. Of course, the book was written by a white guy, but the whole idea, like taking black culture and merging it with Lovecraftian horror, would probably make HP spin in his grave. That we're even playing with his toys and getting our black cooties all over them. But it's like, sorry. And it's like this is chef's kiss, it's just the perfect irony. It's perfect, and I love it.
Well, the thing is, Lovecraft touched on some very primal issues that affect absolutely everybody. It's just that he decided, well, he was a shitty person. So for me, it makes perfect sense that somebody from a different cultural background, even somebody who Lovecraft hated, can feel identified with what Lovecraft wrote because it pertains humanity. So I think for me, it's the same as when people like the the works of Orson Scott Card. Orson Scott Card is a piece of shit. He's a fucking asshole, and he's a horrific human being, but I can understand people liking it. So I think, as far as I'm concerned, to be honest, if that weren't the case, I think it would make it an absolutely fantastic thing for black creators to take Lovecraft's work, to make him spinning his grave as if he's dancing breakdance. coffin.
You know what? There's a movie called Breakin', and the best breakdancer in that film is the character named Turbo. And he's like, if you haven't seen it, this is pure 80s cheesy goodness. Just look it up on Amazon Prime or Hulu or whatever, and please, really just enjoy yourself. But you also said that you like medieval fantasy. Is there something specific about medieval fantasy in particular that you really like?
Okay, I'm going to be very honest about this. The thing I like the most about medieval fantasy is that it's so easy. It is such an easy, grilled environment that I have read about, known about for so long, that is ingrained. I don't think that there is anything right away original or remarkable about medieval fantasy. It is very rare that anybody does something new about medieval fantasy. And I like it because I don't need to think about it.
Right.
I'm just there, and I am familiar with pretty much any concept about medieval fantasy. So it's easy in the mind. That's why I like it so much. I don't have to think.
Oh. It's kind of like comfort food, I guess.
Yeah. It's the McDonald's of settings, quite frankly.
We gotta go to the McDonald's. We got a hamburger meat at home.
We are gonna get in so much trouble for this episode.
Oh my god! But I think, you know, I think I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned it to you or somewhere else, but I was like, I'm kind of burnt out on D&D. It's like I want to play something else, and I wonder if it's medieval that I'm tired of, or medieval Europe?
Ooh, I would say medieval. In my case, medieval Europe, definitely.
Okay, because I'm like, well, if it were a different cultural milieu, like if it were a different cultural understanding, where, for instance, instead of like this kind of weird mishmash of quote, you know, put this in quotes, dear listener, medieval Catholicism with Hellenistic pantheism, you know, Hellenistic pantheons, and I put Hellenistic in quotes too because that's not how Greek deities truly functioned, with a very huge dose of American evangelicalism as far as like the underpinnings of the cultural assumptions going into the work.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what would change if we kind of, instead of basing it on those things, we base it on, you know, African or Caribbean or Black American, you know, culture. Or the medieval part was the aesthetic, but the cultural underpinnings were very different. I'm not sure how that would work because so much of, I guess because we take so much for granted. It's like you said, it's like the McDonald's of settings. It's just, okay. But I wonder what would happen if the cultural underpinnings were different. And not just the aesthetic.
It's a good question, to be perfectly honest. I don't think I can answer that because I haven't seen, I think for that to happen, it would have to be created by somebody from an outside culture.
Mm.
So for instance, I think it would be really cool if I, to have a medieval African setting,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on Africa 1,000 years ago.
Right.
You know, but I don't think, and I'm going to be controversial here, okay? So listen, and you know, as I was kind of in a jokey tone, even though I meant what I said earlier, but this is slightly more controversial. I don't believe a white dude would be able to write that and do it justice.
Right.
But also, I don't think an American person in general, even a Black American person, would be able to write that without bias,
right,
and without influence from the environment where that person grew up.
Right.
You know, I think it would be impossible to expect that. Do I think it would have to be a Black person writing that sort of thing? Yes. Absolutely. Do I think that to do full justice, it would have to be an African person who's been there, you know, and can tell me about the old civilizations in Congo or in Nigeria or in anywhere? Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that would be important.
Right. Yeah, I think it, like, to get a sense of Africa specifically, and I say Africa specifically, like it's not the second biggest continent on the planet. Like, it's not the most linguistically and genetically diverse continent on the planet. It's a special case because so much of what Africa is today is so directly shaped by colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
And a pre-colonial Africa is like, that is not what we're taught in American public school. Okay, I'm just going to put that out there. It's not what we're taught in American public school. And while, you know, we can take field trips, like Black Americans can take field trips, and we can read a lot, it's not the same as being immersed in that, you know, it's like, no, there's a lot about Africa that survives in African Americans. That's a whole other conversation. But it's different when you're not in the diaspora. The diaspora experience is fundamentally different. And it's it's like, the closest I've seen come to it is like, it's actually Wakanda, but that's more mm-hmm. Afrofuturist. You know, that's more sci-fi Afrofuturism than it is like a medieval fantasy.
And you know, I think that's a lot safer to do than writing medieval fantasy, because one thing that people don't think about very often is that most of Africa's history has been erased.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when white people arrived in Africa hundreds of years ago and started colonizing, we have been made believe that it was all you know, tribes of Tarzan-like people with no civilization, with no culture, with no sophistication. And it was white folk who went there and introduced them to all the good thing that God had bestowed upon them. Right. And white people went as saviors.
Right.
That, I don't know to what extent has... Let me rephrase that. That has been proven to be bullshit. That's for starters. How much we've lost because white people arriving there either destroyed or simply erased and dismissed because they consider it to be whatever it is they found unworthy of attention and praise.
Right.
We will never know. That's the truth. But I bet you anything that if you have grown up in Africa, you will have heard stories, legends, you know, folklore that is only present in that part of the world. And right. As you say, it's an immensely huge place, bigger than people think, because we look at maps. Most maps portray Africa to be about a quarter of the size of its real size.
Right.
And without that knowledge, without that being there, immersed in that, as you said, without being that diaspora, you know, anything you do is just based on hearsay, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much, like, what little I've been exposed to about African folklore, about the... myths and legends and stuff like that is the fascinating stuff. And the very ways that a medieval fantasy African setting would function are so different from what you would expect from something like standard D&D. And I don't like, and I hate to bring up D&D like this just to compare it to something like this, but it's like, for instance, in traditional African religions, like there's interactions between the human world and the spirit world. Mm-hmm. Humans and spirits interact, like, not necessarily in the same way that humans interact with humans, but, you know, or that animals, in the stories, the animals are can be intelligent and speak. So, and I mean, that's kind of a ubiquitous thing and across cultures that the intelligent animals thing, because you have kitsune in Japan and whatnot. But I mentioned that because it's like, it's something that like imagining a world where that's just a thing, it kind of blows my mind because it's so simple, yet so far reaching. Because, okay, now how would you structure a society in a world where spirits are tangible reality, you know, and have real effects on the way people live? Or if some animals were as smart as, if not smarter than people, or humans, I'll say, because in the stories, the animals are people. They're just never. And it's like, because it's sort of like, and then there's the especially like West African folklore too, it's like, okay, so what about the way of like storytelling as kind of a sacred, like a storyteller is almost sacred, a sacred figure, as opposed to just an entertainer. So you have all that going on, and just the different cultural underpinnings, and it's not something I would feel comfortable creating myself. So if someone is creating this or has created it, please let me know. Because I want to play in something where the basic understanding of the world is different. I guess this might be a digression, but it's actually relevant. Because I've done some, because a term I come across lately, it's called diurnal cognition, also known as diurnal orientation. And the way it's described, I would say this is a very African way of looking at the world. And it's a way of looking at the world that's actually survives in the African diaspora. And the way they explain it is, okay, you have, it's not dichotomous where it's either or and one must prevail over the other. It's not like that. It's the polar, like you have polar opposites, but they're interconnected. Okay. Sorry. But they're interconnected. They each have their own specific identity, but they're interdependent and they're functioning with each other, and they're kind of a, it's horizontal rather than vertical. It's like a mutual exchange almost, as opposed to one dominating the other.
Okay.
So it's like both and like they say, well, this is specifically arose out of the diaspora context of slavery and whatnot because it had to, because our experience of the world was one where it was like deeply, deeply, deeply traumatic. Yet at the same time, a source of like great creativity and innovation and all these other wonderful things that happened in diaspora, as well as like that come, that is kind of our heritage as Africans in the diaspora. So yeah, yes, it sounds very convoluted, but that's my very, 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 very short explanation of it. But just imagining a world built on that, right?
It would be fascinating. I think it would be so out there, so new. I think that would make it really exciting. But then I do like new things and different things. Yeah. So I like unknown things. So that would be quite amazing. But we have deviated an awful lot. We started with Harlem Unbound, and we've gone into a whole new discovery of Africa. Have you actually read Harlem Unbound?
I haven't yet. It's like I keep hearing good things about it, but I'm broke. So it's like it'd be one of those games. It's like if somebody wanted to say, I want to play Cthulhu, I would want to play Harlem. I would want to try playing Harlem on that. Because it's like I've seen it off and on. And I was like, this looks really interesting. Can't wait till it comes out. And then, you know, so in the event I get this disposable income, it's on my list of games I really want to try playing. But I have to like the Chaosium's Lovecraft system too. So I hope the game itself is fun, and you know, the system itself is actually fun and not like too crunchy. But yeah.
Well, maybe we should try to talk to Chris Bivey and see if he would be willing to come to the show and talk to us about it. That would be pretty cool, really. But something else that we were talking about, and this is not related necessarily to Harlem Unbound, is that you've been doing some research prior to this episode of the podcast, and found out that there are a lot more Black creators that we may think. It's quite amazing how this is a reflection of something that, again, it may upset some people, but I think we really need to come and think about it. Because one of the things an awful lot of white folks say, you know, when people say I want more representation, is do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And why do you think it is that even though there are a good number, I'm not going to say it's the perfect number, I'm not going to say it's enough, I'm not going to say we shouldn't see any more at all, quite the opposite. But right. Even though there's a good number of Black creators out there, they are not very well known anyway, apart from two or three. Really, they don't get the visibility they deserve compared with the visibility the white folk deserve, but they are there.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, your pardon. I've said the white folk deserve. No, the white folk get. No, deserve. Right. Sorry, that was a slip of the tongue. But your pardon.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a ton. I mean, before we started recording, like, I was doing research. It was just like, okay, Black role-playing creators or Black role-playing games creators or however, you know, I type it out in Google or whatever. And it's just like thousands. Thousands of hits. Not even like it's sort of like I actually had to narrow it down a bit because if there's any like tech savvy person out there who's interested in this topic and wants to do me a solid, please come up with a website, one website I could go to where I can find all these games, all these black role-playing game designers, and I can narrow it down by like genre, whether their game is free or not, by how crunchy it is, or however many different ways you can describe a role-playing game. And so I can, like, because there's like a huge gamut of things. It's like, one of the people I came across was, I hope I'm saying their name right, Ali Bustian with Mad Hero Games. And a lot of those games, it's like one of them's about like queerness and relationships. There's another one about these other experiences and whatnot. And that's just one person. Like a diverse array of game types. And it was that was one person. So, you know, and then of course you have, if you've been on Twitter and you've been following this topic, you've probably heard of Motherlands RPG, Rival Waters Deep. There's a Twitter account called POCTTRPGs on Twitter. I follow them on Twitter. And of course, you know, on Twitch, you hear about, you know, different people like Tanya the Past, Critical Bard. And there are older games too that I think that are due for revival. There was a game a while back, I'd say a good 10 years back, called Steal Away Jordan, which was a game based around, not game based on slavery, but a game that directly deals with chattel slavery. There's another game called Weird Is Bond, which was like taking hip hop and making like magic.
Wow. Yeah. Now that would be amazing.
Yeah. Steal Away Jordan is by a black person, okay? This is not a white person's rendition of a game about slavery. But if you're familiar with Octavia Butler's Kindred or Toni Morrison's Beloved or whatever, it's like meant to explore the different. The game is meant to explore that particular trauma. I haven't played it. I didn't get a chance. So if you have, please tell us about that experience. Afrofuturism is really big among black game designers. There's this really amazing, like, you know how often in role-playing communities, especially white dominant ones, there's a dichotomy between sci-fi and fantasy. But in a lot of the cases, these games by black game designers are merging the two, which goes back to the diurnal cognition thing I was talking about. It just, you know, because it's supposed to be sci-fi or fantasy, but it's merging them both. And yes, I know about Shadowrun, but that's a different rant and a different conversation. This has the sci-fi and fantasy a bit more integrated with each other and integrated with the setting. It just feels more holistic in a way. There was also, so there's a lot of, there are a lot of us out there. And I designed some stuff myself too, and I'm kind of trying to put it, you know, I do my theorizing or whatever on RPG tweets on WordPress. And I'm kind of working on updating my my War on the North Pole Christmas game that it will eventually get around to posting it out. But yeah.
War on the North Pole?
Yes. So way back in, was it 2003 or 2004? 2004. Mm-hmm. I made this game called Xmas. And I'm showing this to you because it's an actual thing. I have a physical copy of it. And at the time, it was about this, it was about, on the North Pole, there's a war between the Christmas elves. And there are, okay, and like, one side are the loyalists who are loyal to Santa, and on the other side are the rebels, and they're saying, overthrow the jolly bastard, but, and they're having a war, and they use the toys as weapons, and they're trying to destroy one another, you know, before the year starts up again. And so, and it's kind of like, is Santa really this jolly, kind, jolly soul, or is he like a tyrannical taskmaster? My revision of this is going to lean on a tyrannical taskmaster side of things, and you're playing the rebel elf. It was just this weird thing that I came up with. Like, kind of spurred a moment when I realized it was December. I was like, oh yeah, I need to do something for Christmas.
That sounds really cool, actually. I can see, you know, the elves building snowmen constructs, you know, and sending them forth and doing, you know, snowball cannons and shooting snowballs and stuff like that. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah, there's snowballs and stuff. Like, all the elves look exactly alike. they may or may not have, but like they have, well, and in the original, it was this, they had three traits, naughty, nice, and spirit. let's see, there were rules, they have silly names like tinsel and peppermint, whatever. Yes, and they can enchant toys to do things like,
wow, that'd be so cool. That sounds pretty amazing. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. So I have to hurry up and get that on it. Get that. Put that on my blog. But then there's like an older game I did called Cathanoxia that I tried. This was like a story game before story games became very popular. So, but now I'm like, yeah.
Well, you've done an awful lot of things. We should see more of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but this is like, but Paco, this has been like, I was saving things on a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Oh, one of those.
Okay, this is when rich text format was a thing.
I miss those days.
Yeah, those floppy disks.
Yeah. Ah, the joys of getting them close to a magnet.
Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I really thought I was doing something. that was high tech. Okay. So all the black designers, if you're doing off-the-wall stuff like that, I definitely want to hear from you. If you know of black designers doing like off-the-wall stuff like that, I'd love to hear about them. I guess since I grilled Paco about his role-playing tastes, I guess I'd be like, well, I'm a big proponent of story games. I like character-driven games with a, you know, that can have a strong thematic focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to have like, and I like light streamlined systems that's very intuitive and user friendly, which is why I like some of the setting agnostic games like Fate, or even better, Fate Accelerated. I love Primetime Adventures. What else I want to do? Speaking of horror, Paco, I love Little Fears.
Okay.
Because it's like, you know, that would be the perfect game to run a people under the stairs type scenario. And If you're Black and you haven't seen The People Under the Stairs, you need to fix that. Because that is... The movie itself, I believe, was directed by Wes Craven. But running through it is this amazing social commentary about wealth and poverty and race. And then also, like, how racism kind of affects the psyches of white people in a very detrimental way. Like, I don't want to give too much away, but those are some really messed up people in that movie.
I need to watch that film. I haven't seen that film.
Yeah, it's from the early 90s. I mean, oh my God, Black people were, we would do it. Oh my God, we were looking up so much in the 90s. Then Bush happened. But oh my God, things were looking so good. What else did I like? Speaking of horror, I liked Vampire in Brooklyn. Like, if I run a World of Darkness game, Vampire in Brooklyn would probably fit very well into that. It's got that atmosphere, but and it's got like some scares in it, but it's also kind of funny. And it was like, again, it's like, you know, it's like taking Black culture as like the default or the basic milieu, the basic, like the thing that makes it work, you know, and it's so refreshing because it's like, it's not that the narratives themselves or the settings themselves are overtly doing anything that strikes me as super subversive, but then again, I'm a Black person, so that's normal to me. But it's not normal to people who are not exposed to a lot of this, to a lot of Black media, or people who are not exposed to Black art. And so, yeah, it's like, yeah, that'd be a great World of Darkness game. I would totally love it. Or do a World of Darkness game in a majority Black city. I mean, Detroit is right there. Speaking of Detroit, Flint is right there. DC is right there. Atlanta is right there. Heck, you can even say New Orleans right there. You know, like, and it's like, yeah, I know, in Harlem, back in the day it was Harlem, and before it was Black, it was Jewish. But the, you know, and yeah, I know, white hipsters have moved into Harlem. It's not, it's still, like, Black culture is still its lifeblood, but gentrification is a thing. But yeah, it's like, so yeah, it's, so, there's so many different things that I want to see Black designers tackle and really bring it to life. That would be so amazing. But
it's a very tricky one, because we see the circles in which you and I move, and I'm trying to measure every word I say for this episode, because I am not Black, I am not American, and thus my knowledge of this topic is by proxy. Mm-hmm. You know, it is by what I have learned by talking to people such as yourself and, you know, people I have in Facebook, tweets that I read, articles I read. And I don't want by any means sound either authoritative or that I am trying to speak for people that belong to a collective that I don't belong to. I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
But my, I get the feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, that even though you and I move in circles where support for Black creators is there, and people could feel supported and seen by somebody else, I get the feeling that the wider support necessary for those creators to get to a point where going through the pains of creating and publishing is worth it, you know, that support is still not there. That the vast majority of people still feel in the politics and race don't belong in my games. Anybody can be anything, which every day I breathe, I keep, you know, I get to hate that stance more and more because it's complete nonsense.
Right. Yeah. Equity is an issue. The disparity in the resources given to Black designers and developers as opposed to, as opposed to their white counterparts. It's very real. Black designers and content creators in the tabletop, I want to say community, but I want to say industry. Mm. And I'm going to tell you why. Because industry is where the money is.
Yes.
And that's where you get the resources to move from one phase, like from, say, being an amateur to a professional. So once you're professional, we're talking about the industry. Yes, I think that's true. Because, I mean, in the year 2021, and I love what Motherlands is doing for the community. So don't take this and run your mouth and say, Sean hates Motherlands or anything stupid like that. Don't even go there. Because I give it up to them for what they're doing for the community. But there is no excuse in the year 2021 for them to be the first or the only one that people can point to. And there's no excuse that despite the clear quality of the content that they're putting out, often with fewer resources, that they're not that specific game, but a lot of Black designers and developers are not receiving the institutional support that their white counterparts are getting.
Mm.
And if you want to break it down even further into like gender and sexuality and all that and disability even, it's, you know, it becomes even more pronounced, like the more you add to it. But yeah, there is a distinct and noticeable discrepancy. And aside from, you know, kind of these kind of generic statements like do better or pay Black people, I don't know how to fix that because it's such a broad institutional systemic issue. And then there's the fact of the matter of public where tabletop role-playing games are a niche hobby to begin. And especially with COVID and everything, you can't even, you know, getting a game together where you meet with your friends and, you know, and share a space together and play these games. Like, even the way we play games is not the same as it. So, I mean, yeah, we have Zoom and whatnot, but nothing, few things can beat that click, the clack of the dice on the table. Few things can beat that. You know, sharing a physical space with a person. You know, and it's a problem that's like with a lot of that I've noticed also with theater, which is like kind of starting to question how they create content and distribute it, especially since you can't be in the same room without a mask. But yeah, it's just the discrepancy is there. It's marked. It's been commented on a lot. Yet I don't see. But aside from a few statements about Black Lives Matter or something, or their tepid words about commitment to diversity or blah blah blah, equitable workplace, blah blah blah. Oh, we want to be inclusive, da 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 da. It's not translating into anything concrete. So yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there is an awful lot of lip service because I'm going to say this because some people say, you know, you just have to make the effort and find the people. And then immediately come the white folk to say, oh, but if you don't find it, if it is hard, you're making more of an effort. And you know what? Earlier last year, I realized that I had not had a person of color to be interviewed for a very long time. And I hadn't had a black person to be interviewed in my podcast for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, you know, I want to remedy this. It's not, it doesn't make any sense for me to say that I am trying to be an anti-racist person and not have black creators in mm-hmm. my podcast. So right. I went out there thinking I may be able to get one or two. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's have a go. This is not going to be easy. Bull fucking shit for me.
Mm-hmm.
I only had to make a calling in Twitter and one in Facebook. And I have had more black creators in my podcast over the last year
mm-hmm.
than I have had over the previous 9 years since I started the podcast.
Yeah.
So if people think that finding black illustrators, black creators, black anything out there is hard, think twice, because it is not.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to do a little bit of digging, not that much, and you will get the right people doing the right thing for the right projects. So the excuse of, oh, but you have to find it, it's not easy. I'm sorry, it doesn't cut it anymore. It is not the case. Finding black creators, I tell you, if it costs you 10 times more work than it costs me, it's still nothing. Absolutely no effort whatsoever. So please, no more bullshit on this matter. Enough. If you don't have black people in your projects, it's because you haven't moved your arse, not because you can't find them. That's bullshit.
Yeah. If, you know, and we're on, like, Twitter is a really, just FYI, people, Twitter's a great place to look.
Mm.
Twitter's a great place to look. It's, yeah, we're not hiding. We're not, and I say we, but, like, because I wrote a supplement or two or something. Oh, yeah, I did a supplement for Cortex Prime, like, wow, it's gone on, like, a year and a half. 2 years, maybe, who knows? And you know, we're out there, and like many of us are even saying, this is what we do for, you know, we do this for tabletop role playing games. Now, like you said, it's like you just have to do the legwork, and it's not even hard legwork. Your problem, honestly, listener, if you're wondering what your problem, if you're gonna have a problem. Your problem's going to be too many people to choose from.
Mm.
You have way too many options. That's how many of us there are. That's it. It's like the trick is going to be like, how do I narrow this down?
you know as well something that I think happens an awful lot when people, when I say people, I mean white folk. Hire and correct me if I'm wrong, okay, because again, this is just out of my own elucubration. This is my deduction based on what I have seen in social media. But I get the feeling that an awful lot of times the reasons why people don't hire black creators is because black creators are going to bring a different cultural perspective,
right,
that white folk are going to find they don't want to adapt to, that they don't want to compromise with,
right,
that it is hard to actually understand why a black person is saying, hey, this is the way to go, why don't we go this way,
mm-hmm.
and a white person is going to find very difficult to say, yeah, okay, I get it. Because let's face it, I don't think white people in general get it. That's my impression.
Right. Yes, that's true. That is the thing that's reflected throughout corporate America. This little thing we call cultural fit. To me, it's a subtle racist dog whistle whenever I see it. It's Because if you're choosing people about because of cultural fit, I'm going to be like, what kind of culture are you talking about? And who does that include and who does that exclude? And it, I notice that when people talk about culture fit, and I notice it gets really monochromatic. really monochromatic. I get the whiff, you know, of dudedom coming from that too, some a lot of times. And that's the thing, like you said, it's like if you are serious about your statements regarding diversity and inclusion, it can't just be, okay, we have this table and we want to invite a Black person, but they have to be otherwise just like us. That doesn't work because Blackness isn't purely cosmetic. You know, it comes with experiences. It comes with a culture. It's like any kind of intercultural relationship, there has to be give and take. And for the vast majority of American history, it's been all take on the part of white people. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, so they can be a bit more flexible. And if you need help with it, and honestly, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. The issue that I think a lot of Black people have is that either that we're often, because we might occupy a certain, we might get hired for a certain position, or because someone knows us as being smart and articulate, that's another one of those buzzwords, smart and articulate about this race stuff, that we're supposed to put in all this extra time and effort into having a perfect PowerPoint presentation ready to go at a moment's notice when put on the spot. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want that expertise, you're going to have to pay for it. If you want to benefit from that, it's like if you want that help, if you want somebody to like sort of hold your hand through, and I'm not saying, then it's valid to want that. It's valid to need that. And we don't all come from the same background. We don't all know what we don't know. So admitting that you need help is good, but also be understand that if you're leaning on people's expertise about things, pay them like the experts they are. That, and then on top of that, it's like, and I find that if you're actually asking questions in a genuine spirit of inquiry, if you genuinely want to understand or just need someone to point you in the right direction, you're willing to do that. I mean, I guess a lot of people are just scared of Black people. Like, we're going to, like, rob you or something if you say the wrong thing on Twitter. And it's like, oh, that's always some asshole, you know? It's like, look, I said Black people were equal, not superior. There's going to be Black assholes from time to time. But that's not our default setting for most of us. Most of us just want to go about our lives and not have any problems. And it's like, if there's a question or an issue that you want some insight on, plenty of people are willing to kind of explain that a little bit. It's just, but don't exploit us. Don't, like, pick our brains and benefit from our work and then repackage it and sell it and make money off of it. That's the part that really pisses us off.
Understandably.
Okay, so just chill out. Treat us like people. Pay us like the experts and professionals we are. And you're probably, it's like we're not monsters, we're not beasts. You know, we just want, you know, we want to help you and we want to help ourselves too. It's just like anybody. But yeah. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. And I really wish more people just took it like that. Yeah, I really wish I didn't have to hear whenever somebody says hire a Black person. I wish I didn't have to hear, well, I will hire the person who's the right person for the job. You know, I wish if I said to some people, you know, hire a Black person, just make a purpose of hiring a Black person. Oh, then you're being racist because you're operating on the basis of somebody's race. But no, it is not the point. that there is an intent, there is a reason, and it's mm-hmm. not to punch down on white people, it's to punch up on black folk who have not had it as easy as white folk had. Mm-hmm. That's it. And, you know, I always put this, you know, the diversity issue in companies and stuff. I always put it to make it a comparison with cooking. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, do you want to make a recipe, your own recipe? Do you want to have 10 spices and herbs available? Or do you rather have 50? Mm-hmm. What's going to allow you to create a more flavorful and rich an interesting, a memorable dish. Mm-hmm. And I bet you anything, if you have 50 spices to choose from, that's going to be a lot better. You're going to have way more possibilities to create something outstanding. So why limit yourself? Mm-hmm. It's not worth it. You're not getting anything by limiting mm-hmm. yourself in that manner. By all means, if you say, I only want to use 10 spices, fine. Choose 10 of 50, mm-hmm. not 10 of the 10 you've always known, just because they're safe flavors. Mm-hmm. You know, get a bit spicy sometimes, get something different and mm-hmm. see what happens.
Yeah. Another thing I know, say, get out of your comfort zone is saying a lot to this community, but step outside your comfort zone, just to tease it.
Yeah, I don't know. You may find yourself comfortable sitting in a different couch. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just think, as you say, people should chill a little bit better, a little bit more, and just open up. Just open up. You might be surprised. I don't know. You might be surprised. My experience opening up, you know, as a white looking folk. My experience, and as a, you know, culturally, apart from my Roma part, I'm white. I grew up in a white environment, and I have absolutely zero idea what it is to be black in the US, because I am not American. I am European Spanish. Mm-hmm. But my experience of opening up to the issues that black people go through, it has enriched my life so much. I have learned so much. And quite frankly, I think I am a better person because of people like you.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. I'm blushing.
No, seriously. It's you know, as a white person, looking at those perspectives and absorbing and understanding and empathizing, it makes a difference. It truly, truly makes a difference. And it doesn't, and I want white people to understand that. Take it from another white-looking person, okay? It is not going to detract from where you come from your culture, from your identity, from who you are, from who you have been, or who you want to be. Mm-hmm. It's not going to take any of that away. If you bring another person's perspective into your life and accept it as truth, just because you haven't shared it, just because you haven't seen it, just because you haven't experienced it, just accept it as truth. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It is.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful experience.
Yeah. I think that's a great place to stop, you know, like to... a great experience. Do the thing. This is a perfect place to wrap up.
I'm up for that. Yes,
talking about this in a very constructive way, where it's like where it's not constantly debunking, you know, bad logic and disproven statistics.
I'm really glad that we're doing this, because I know I can understand some people may think that, you know, you're always trying to destroy what I believe. And this is a matter of, you know, I don't want to destroy what you believe. I don't want to destroy you as a person, your, you know, foundations. I just want to get rid of the bad beings that support your building so you can actually create better structure in your mind and your life. This is right. not about destroying. This is about building up.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So anyway, next week, another one?
Yes. So don't forget, dear listener, Black creators doing, you know, creating things like the things that we talked about we like. Please comment and let us know who they are if you've heard of them. If you played some of the games we've mentioned, please like share what that experience was like so that we can give a shout out and like maybe invite some of them over to talk about their games with us, especially if there's somebody you know is looking to get on a podcast like this. So please talk to us.
Yeah, and if you are a Black creator, please reach out. Because we would love to have you in the show. Trust me, we'd love to have you in the show. So say hi, please. We're here for you. Seriously.
Yes. All right. Thanks a bunch, dear listener. Bye-bye now.
We'll talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm.